Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Law is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiL, This Week in Law with Denise Howell. Episode 8 for July 6th, 2007. Rate a Lawyer. This Week in Law is brought to you by Audible. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/twit. We'd like to thank Victor Cajau for help with this podcast. You can listen to Victor's own podcast, The Typical Mac User, at typicalmacuser.com/WordPress, and Immigration Tales at immigrationtales.com.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of This Week in Law. I'm Denise Howell, your host, and we've got a great episode for you here today. I'm really excited about it because with me here today, I've got Mark Britton, the CEO of Avvo. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Ernie Svensson, Ernie the attorney. Thanks for being back on the show, Ernie.
Sure, great to be here.
And a couple of newcomers to TWiL. In addition to Mark, we've got Dennis Kennedy of the Dennis Kennedy blog. Dennis, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
And also joining us today is Mozzie Hedayat. Am I saying that right, Mozzie?
Absolutely right.
Great. Thanks for being here, too.
Thanks for having me on.
So the reason I've convened you all today and am particularly excited to have Mark on the phone is because of Mark's site, Avvo.com, which is sort of the Web 2.0 world meets the legal world. And for any of our listeners who have not yet encountered Avvo, Avvo is basically a lawyer rating site. Mark, why don't you tell us a little bit about Avvo and your vision for it before we get into talking about its launch and why it has been somewhat controversial?
Sure. So taking it a click above the rating, Avvo's mission is to help consumers navigate the legal industry. That's our overarching mission. But as a secondary mission, we're also trying to build that win-win for both consumers and lawyers. Now, just speaking to those two constituency groups separately, for the consumers in particular, when it comes to choosing a lawyer, your average consumer has no idea where to start. And as we go through our talk today, I can color that in a bit. But the simple fact is, and I'll bet for everyone on this phone that's a lawyer, we have during our entire careers received those calls from friends and family and far-off acquaintances with people saying, "Can you help me choose a lawyer?" And it's interesting. You don't get as many of those calls regarding ovens or restaurants or what have you. But over and over, you have consumers that are coming to us, but it's all emblematic of the fact that consumers are having an incredibly difficult time navigating the legal industry. And that is why Avvo exists, primarily, is to help them navigate. Secondarily, for lawyers, when you think about, there are 825,000 practicing lawyers out there today, according to the ABA. And it's an incredibly competitive business. And in fact, out of the 825,000 practicing lawyers, roughly half of them, so say 400,000 of those practicing lawyers, are solo practitioners, one-person shops that are taking case after case to keep the doors open. And the other fact that comes out of that, that comes out of the ABA, which is always surprising to me, is that out of those 400,000 solos, roughly 60% of them do not have a web presence. Now, that might be because they don't have the time, or they don't have the resources, or maybe they don't want them. But as you continue to see consumers having a difficult time navigating the legal industry, they historically have been going to the yellow pages. You're now seeing them start to go to the search engines. But Avvo, in addition to helping the consumer, can also help those lawyers have a presence on the web. And so that's the win-win we're trying to create. We're trying to build a marketplace where there is tremendous information and guidance for the consumer to help them choose the right lawyer, but also give those lawyers out there that do or do not have a web presence, give them the tools, give them a platform to set themselves apart from the crowd.
Well, let me pick at one thing that you just said there. Not that I disagree with it, but I just want to push back on it a little bit. The notion that there's a need for a site like Avvo, or there's a benefit for a site like Avvo, or a benefit to the solo practitioners of the existence of a site like Avvo, because it enables them to enhance their web presence. Might there not be a downside for folks that don't already have a pre-existing web presence in the way that your algorithm slices and dices them and comes up with a rating?
If I understand your question, Denise, you're saying, isn't it possible that with the Avvo rating, somebody could be rated lower and therefore it might not be as helpful to them?
That's right. That someone who's, you know, who does have a web presence, who's not, you know, I mean, I also kind of take issue with the notion that small and solos are less likely to have a web presence than someone with a big firm. You know, it almost seems to me like in today's world, and we've got a lot of small and solo practitioners here on our panel today,
right,
who are all on the web. I don't, you know, maybe we're the exception and not the rule. But
No. And certainly I was not saying that somehow there's a less web presence. I'm just speaking to the ABA numbers that you have 60% of solos that don't have a website.
Right.
And so, but there are a lot of other firms, small firms, and maybe even some large firms that don't have a web presence. And I would argue that Avvo could help them as well. Now, to your other question, as far as there are some people that are not as rated as highly in Avvo as others. I mean, that's the essence of what makes Avvo unique. Not everybody is super in our site. We have differing levels within the numerical rating system of all the way from extreme caution up to superb. And that is us trying to give guidance to the consumer. I mean, we talk about all the information that we collect, but the value here is our guidance. And the guidance comes in the form of the Avvo rating, as you correctly point out, Denise. But also, you have client ratings, you know, that firsthand account of what it's like to deal with the lawyer. And you also have peer endorsements, other lawyers in the community saying, thumbs up, this is a solid lawyer in my community. And those are three opinions regarding the information on this lawyer. They're opinions that are, they're imperfect because they are opinions, but they're all valuable. And what we're trying to do is bring together a mosaic of those opinions, so that the consumer has a better place to start. Because where consumers are going today are principally the Yellow Pages. Okay, the Yellow Pages made $1.3 billion off of lawyer advertising last year. It is their number one revenue category far and away. The Yellow Pages Association reports that they had 311 million lookups for lawyers. 311 million lookups last year. So you're talking about tremendous activity of consumers just going, letting their fingers do the walking. Or now you're starting to see a fairly significant migration onto the web. But even with the search engines, even if you're using Google or Ask or Yahoo or MSN, whatever it might be, you go to one lawyer's page, you go to another lawyer's page, and consumers have a very difficult time synthesizing that information, understanding what the different pieces of information on those websites mean. And all we're trying to do at Avvo is give consumers a better place to start.
So to do that, just to sum up for folks who may not yet have visited the site, you provide your own sort of editorial take on what the information available about a lawyer means about his or her ability to handle a specific task. And you generally, you know, whether they are a competent lawyer or not, you provide your own sort of Avvo-sponsored opinion about that.
Yeah, looking at their background, yes.
Based on their background, the information you've been able to find about that, and we'll talk a bit more about what information you're looking at in a second. And then you also, you have two other components, right? You have an ability for colleagues in the legal field to comment on one another, and also for third parties who are clients to come and leave feedback. Am I leaving anything out?
No, those are the principal. I mean, outside of the lawyer being able to come in and claim their profile and upload valuable information for the consumer.
Right. And that is important. The lawyers themselves are not locked out of this process. They are.
No, not at all. In fact, it's a highly interactive process, which is it's important to note for everyone.
Right. So against that context, you guys launched what, when we last spoke, we're exactly on top of how many days ago you launched. How many days ago was it now?
Well, we launched on June 5th. What is today?
Well, we're recording on July 3rd, so.
Okay. So all the days start to blur together, yeah. But we're coming up on a month.
Roughly a month. And within a week that you guys were?
9 days. Are you talking about the class action lawsuit?
Yes,
9 days.
9 days into your short life, you were hit with your first lawsuit, which was brought by some lawyers who were not happy with the way the rating system handled them. And you've certainly been subject to a lot of discussion and editorial on the web about how things have gone and, you know, how, what should go into making up a rating, what this all means. And I think you've really sort of touched on one of several industries where reputation is everything to the folks in it. And so, you know, they're going to watch this closely and want to know, you know, what happens with it. And I did read through your motion to dismiss the lawsuit, which is now pending. When is the hearing on that?
You know, I'm not entirely sure. I'm certainly not an expert in federal procedure. I believe that sometime later in the month, the plaintiffs are required to respond, and then I believe they can request a hearing. I don't know. I think the judge can actually rule on this without a hearing.
Oh, interesting.
And I don't. Do we have anyone on the phone that's an expert in federal procedure?
It's pending in district court in Washington, guys. Have you guys had the chance to look at the motion to dismiss?
This is Mazi Hadid. I have, excuse me, and I certainly wouldn't call myself an expert, but I mean, traditionally in federal court, especially the district court level, most things are decided without oral argument. So oral argument would be the exception, not the rule in a situation like this. The briefs would stand for the propositions, the judge would decide based on those, unless it were requested, and this case might be high profile enough for that to happen.
Yeah, I find the case really interesting because It doesn't just sort of stand for the proposition that lawyers should or should not be rated in a certain way. It really, you know, cuts across a lot of different industries as far as social media and what it can do to enhance people's reputation information that is available. And as Mark said, you know, there has been a void and a difficulty in getting information about lawyers out to people in need of their services. It's kind of, you can look at it one way as a void, or you could look at it as sort of a mountain of too much information to sift through. Either way, you wind up with people who are confused and somewhat lost when they're in a tough situation of actually needing competent legal assistance. So,
now, Denise, can I chime in here? This is
sure, absolutely. And for, you know, Mazi and Dennis, you guys haven't been on the show before, but yes, everybody, please chime in at will.
Okay. I mean, I didn't want to interrupt what the flow of the conversation between you and Mark, but you know, one thing I just want to observe on the show that I believe I observed maybe in an email message previously is this. You know, the fact is, when I saw Avvo, and by the way, Dennis Kennedy was the one who, I mean, I saw his heads up on Avvo was the first thing I saw that mentioned Avvo, and I kind of took it from there. That was a while ago, and you know, over time, it wasn't clear at first. Obviously, they were in stealth mode. It wasn't clear what they were going to end up doing that was going to have an effect on the industry. And then when I saw what they were doing, I had some pretty specific ideas about what it amounted to. Then a lawsuit came, and I'm looking at the lawsuit, and I'm looking at the website, and I'm looking at the lawsuit, and I'm looking at the website, and I'm thinking, have I been looking at the wrong Avvo? Because the lawsuit talks about issues of ownership of one's identity and sort of the propriety of information that comments on other information. And here in, you know, I don't know, in my simple view, I had seen Avvo as an excellent step towards creating a user-directed, and by user I include both attorney and client, user-directed marketplace where information was fast-moving, could be put in, taken out. In other words, something akin to a quote-unquote genuine market, as opposed to a sort of a one-sided, editor-managed, these are the lawyers from whom you will pick. These are the good ones. We say so. This was the opposite. This is a trend that's been bubbling all over the place, right? I mean, this is what makes Web 2.0 Web 2.0. What's great about Flickr, there are a lot of photo sites. Flickr is user-driven. I saw Avvo the same way. Is that the wrong way to look at it? You know, if the plaintiffs in the lawsuit have their way, all of those factors would be overshadowed. That's it. That's just my two cents.
Yeah, that's a really valid point. And I think it's important to bear in mind that there are, you know, at least two user-driven components to what Avvo is doing in addition to its own component, the rating. And I guess that's, you know, when you compare other sorts of social media reputation-oriented sites, maybe they leave out that last component, you know. I mean, think about something like Hot or Not. The Hot or Not folks don't come in and tell you, yeah, we think this person's really hot. They leave it to the users to come up with those decisions, and you know, they let it be kind of a crowd wisdom driven free-for-all. So Avvo has made a choice not to do that and to go ahead and say, we're going to give you this little extra bit of information, which is our assessment based on the information we've been able to gather. And I guess the question in the lawsuit is A, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, and B, is, I guess the lawsuit really probes, you know, the way that the rating is generated, which Avvo, like other sites that have determined to rank or rate, has chosen not to share all of its secret sauce, although you guys have certainly been forthcoming on your blog, Mark, about what kinds of factors are being put in there and what people can do to affect their ratings. Would you speak for a moment about the rating process and what changes you've made there in response to the feedback you've gotten since launch?
Sure. As you were talking along, let me make a couple of other points as a preamble. So we talk about Hot or Not and those types of sites where you don't have, we'll call it, I'll use your words, Denise, an editorial component. One big distinction there is that a lot of consumers do not have a difficult time forming an opinion as to whether someone is hot or not. The reason that Avvo exists and there is a void that Avvo can fill is because consumers are so perplexed. We actually, we commissioned a survey through Ipsos. I don't know if everyone on the phone is familiar with Ipsos, but it's a large multinational research firm. And, coming out of that were some pretty interesting facts. And one of them was only 17% of the people surveyed said that it was easy for them to research detailed information about attorneys. And similarly, another 17%, but only 17% said that they were very confident in their ability to choose the right attorney. And then the number that Ipsos gave us that was very surprising to me is that over the past 2 years, 25 million Americans that were faced with a situation in which they considered hiring an attorney, where they thought they needed an attorney, but they didn't hire one because they didn't know how to go about choosing one. Now, that number right there, that 25 million number, that should be alarming enough for attorneys, because I don't know if it's because they can't get enough detailed information or because they're intimidated by the legal process. The fact is you have 25 million Americans who are staying out of the marketplace because it's too hard for them to navigate. And so, you know, you don't have 25 million Americans having a tough time deciding whether someone's hot or not. That is why we provide that opinion. But also, when you look at the complaint, and I can't talk too much about the complaint, and it's frustrating that it chills my ability to have this conversation. But if you read through it and form your own opinion, I mean, they are critical of all of the opinions that are offered on our site. They go through and talk about why the Avvo rating is a problem, why customer ratings are a problem, client ratings are a problem, and why lawyer ratings are a problem. And that, from somebody who's been in the e-commerce business for a long time and also has been part of the evolution of the e-commerce business and has a vision, I mean, we really believe that this is the future of where information services are going, whether it be in legal or medical or anyplace else. It is more transparency. It is having more information out there that allows the consumer to have more control over their selection decision. And, you know, to see that kind of discussion, which I think Mozzie points out, pointed out quite directly, to see that discussion that says all of these opinions, because they're pointed at us, are problematic. Boy, that is very frightening for me as somebody who's been in e-commerce and also as an American and as somebody that believes in free speech. And that is the essence of our motion to dismiss.
Now, right. You guys have very strongly come out with some First Amendment defenses and also Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act as far as the third-party content on your site.
Correct. And so here's the thing. So you and now I'm actually getting to the question you asked me, and that is changes that we've made to the site. Again, being in the e-commerce business for some time, and it's really just in business in general. I think that each of you who have your own practices and interact with the public every day would, there are applications of this in your own mind.
Mark, can we back up and give our listeners an idea of your background? You were at Expedia, correct?
Sure. So I'm a 15-year lawyer. I started my career in a small firm. I went to a medium firm. I then went to the federal government for a number of years. I was at the Securities and Exchange Commission. And then I went to Preston Gates and Ellis, which is a large firm here in Seattle. And then I became the general counsel at Expedia. And then I took over, I became the number two person at Expedia. And I became the executive vice president of worldwide corporate affairs. And in that capacity, I oversaw strategy, corporate development, finance, legal, HR, et cetera, for all of Interactive Corp's. Interactive Corp purchased Expedia, and Interactive Corp is everybody on the phone. Well, for anyone that is not familiar, listeners that are not familiar with Interactive Corp, it is a company that is it's a public company with the CEO and chairman being Barry Diller. And they own Ticketmaster and Hotels.com and Ask.com, et cetera. It's really a conglomerate of interactive companies. They acquired Expedia, and I was the EVP overseeing all of the travel assets. So Hotels.com, we acquired Hotwire, there was Interval International, Expedia, et cetera. And one of the companies that we did a tremendous amount of due diligence on was TripAdvisor. And I don't know how many people are familiar with TripAdvisor, but it is a user-generated content site that is focused on helping consumers navigate the travel industry. Now, we did not buy that while I was working with Expedia, but they bought it shortly after, and I was always impressed with that site, and I loved what they did. And there are echoes of what TripAdvisor is doing in the travel space with what Avvo is doing in the legal space. So now, coming to the changes, and I'll touch on these very quickly so that I'm not monopolizing the conversation, but any time that you are running a business, any time that you are running a website, to the extent that any of your constituency groups are coming to you and saying, how does this work? I'm not quite sure I understand it. Then it's incumbent upon you to look into it and understand why the user community is not seeing things the way that you see it. And, you know, that's why you do usability testing, and we did a ton of usability testing on this product. And however, once it was out there and we launched a beta, which is essentially an open test.
Let me ask you about the usability testing and the beta launch. Did you have a closed beta before you launched?
We did.
How many people were in that?
Oh, I'd have to have you talk to our testing people. But, you know, the problem with a beta, especially a closed beta, is that if you're trying to stay in stealth mode and you don't want anyone stealing your thunder or anyone copying what you're doing, you know, there's kind of a tipping point where you cannot distribute it as broadly as you'd like. And the issue with that is, you know, there is tremendous wisdom in the masses. There's tremendous wisdom in a broad user community. And so, you know, that's why a beta is great, in that you can get the feedback from that broad user community. And some of the feedback that we were getting is they were saying, to the extent that you are rating attorneys based solely on public records, in some instances, you know, I don't necessarily understand the rating that you have here, or explain that to me better, et cetera. And so while those conversations, you know, 90% of those conversations, it goes back to the earlier point, Denise, where we would talk about the interactivity of the site. And people would say, oh, you're kidding. So I can actually come in and I can upload information and it's all for free. And you'd say, yes, it is. And they would say, great. But the fact is, it was also for our detractors creating quite a sideshow. And, you know, Harriet Myers or Hillary Clinton or whomever it might be, why is she rated a 6.1? Why is this? Why is that? And the more that we thought about it, to the extent that we changed for some of our ratings to a non-numerical rating, and again, we're listening to the user community, we're getting constructive feedback, and we're saying, geez, is this something that we should change? And we had a vigorous debate here within the company as to whether that should be the case. But the fact is, where we came out to is it didn't change the consumer proposition. It didn't change, consumers would see very little difference to the extent that they're coming into our site the way that the person's coming into the yellow pages of the search engines or what have you, sees very little difference in the site. And so we made the change in order to make it more intuitive for the users, and the difference in the consumer proposition was almost nil. And that's why we did it, and we've received great feedback, and I'm glad that it's one of many changes we've made in this site from day one as we've received that constructive feedback, and we'll continue to do it, and I think that that's the only way that any business survives is by listening to the user community, having a dialogue with the user community, and making those changes as appropriate.
I think I might be the only lawyer on the show today who actually has an AVA rating, except for you, Mark. You probably have one, right?
I do have an AVA rating. I think Mozzie does. Dennis, yeah, do you have an?
No, I don't think you're in Missouri. I mean, that's...
Of course. Excuse me.
When you announced the site, it took just a little feedback when it wasn't very clear after I'd done a whole bunch of searches that, you know, Missouri wasn't covered, so... But yeah, I think that it is sort of a limited rollout at this point, and that can be confusing for people.
And you're not in Louisiana either, correct?
Correct.
So you got me, Mafia Diet. I'm in a market in which they're active, and I'm a practitioner.
You're in Boston, Mozzie?
Chicago.
Chicago, that's right. What's your rating?
I have a 10 rating.
You have a 10?
I have a 10 rating.
Very good.
And, you know...
Did you start out at a 10?
No, I started out at, I think everyone started out at a rather moderate level, a 6 or something.
And so what did you go, how did it shoot from a 6 to a 10?
I think it was simply because, basically the rating seemed to respond the more I told the system about myself. I mean, you know, I would put in my experience, I would put in my... the presentations I've given, the things I've written, the bar association positions I've held, et cetera, and the rating went up. I mean, I think that kind of mechanism serves a great purpose. I mean, think about the message it sends. Be honest, put it out there, you do better. You know, you'd hate to send the opposite message.
How would you feel, though, if, you know, Mark has definitely jumped into an area where, you know, as we were saying before, there's a void and it's difficult to find this sort of information or this sort of trustworthy information. How would you feel if lots of other people jumped into that arena? And in addition to whatever Martindale Hubbell has to say about you, and that is for those of our audience who are not, you know, entrenched in the legal field, Martindale Hubbell is this huge tome of books, which is this directory of all the lawyers. Is it worldwide or just the United States? I'm not even sure.
It's worldwide.
It's so huge, it looks like it must be worldwide. And information that it carefully gathers and puts down on paper. And I guess you can access Martindale Hubbell online too, but it's the same sorts of records. But there's no interactivity to it. So this sort of changes the game plan or the playing field for that sort of information. But how would you feel if, in addition to Martindale Hubbell, which has been out there forever, and AVO, there were 15 other sites like this who tried to slice and dice and provide information and perhaps rate and recommend folks in the profession? And the only way that you could ensure that your reputation was where you want it to be for reasons of self-confidence and livelihood, was to go and spend a ton of time with each of these newcomers as they came up to ensure that their rating system responded in the way that AVO's has.
Are you talking to me now?
Yeah.
This is a question for me as a user and a practicing lawyer.
Yes.
Okay. How would I feel?
Yes.
I'd get darted right away if I wanted to be listed. But I mean, that's the market. I'm not trying to give you a smart aleck answer.
No. That
is the marketplace.
I want a smart aleck answer.
Okay, you want a smart aleck answer?
Absolutely.
Here it is. Why are lawyers afraid? That's the question. Why are we afraid? Okay. Why would a lawyer rather argue over whether a rating system would function in this hypothetical worst case scenario rather than just participating in the system and letting it evolve? Doesn't that say more about the complaining parties than about the system?
Yeah, I guess what I'm getting at is that the part that gives me a little pause is sort of this distributed reputation that we all already have. But when the distributed reputation then requires so much of your own attention and time to manage, it becomes something that you just have to let go of at some point. I have not yet claimed my Avvo rating. My Avvo page. I may at some point, but the idea of having to sit there and input all this information about myself that is available elsewhere.
But that's fine. Let your potential clients find it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't put stuff in my Avvo rating. Because I have nothing else to do. I have lots of work to do, and prospective clients could and are welcome to find out all kinds of stuff about me from other sources. Guess what though? If Avvo follows through, and let's remember, there are two halves to the Avvo promise, only one half, and I would argue it's actually less than a half, it's actually a rather small sliver, has to do with lawyers. We happen to be making the biggest noise. We happen to have the biggest mouths, but Avvo really isn't about us, right? It's about the people we serve. So if Avvo does its job and reaches out to the prospective client, and the prospective client comes on the site and uses the site and finds me, or is looking for somebody who does what Denise does, for example. If I did exactly what Denise did, and we were in the same market, and I looked at Denise's rating, and there's no information there, and I looked at my rating, and there's a ton of information there, well, you know what? The devil I know is better than the devil I don't. At least they know something about me, and they can make an informed decision.
Yeah, I absolutely agree 100% with what you're saying. But what I'm getting at here is at some point it becomes an unmanageable proposition to be out there. Okay, I have to devote, here's my 2-hour time block today in my day where I have to go out there and fill out forms online because there are so many people, attempting to or purporting to track who I am. And if I don't participate in what they're doing, they'll get it wrong.
And that seems wrong to you? Or doesn't that seem normal? Isn't that how our lives are organized anyway?
I suppose. But I mean, I guess I'm just more comfortable when if a rating is to be sifted out of something that purports to say how well I could or could not participate in someone's representation as a professional, then, I would want that rating to come from, I guess, the more user-driven aspects of process than something that I have to be constantly out there participating in and managing myself, because it's just, at some point it becomes impractical.
Do you suppose if you Google yourself, you'll come up on Google?
What do you think?
Yeah, so you're there,
no,
like it or not, and Google uses an algorithm.
I think you're missing my point, though. I'm perfectly happy to be on Google. I don't have to, I'm doing what I do, and I get on Google. And I live with whatever Google assigns me in the way of reputation, right? But if I were able to manipulate my page rank by participating in Google in some way, that's the part of it that is somewhat disturbing to me.
So you've never heard of search engine optimization?
Very
well that people do that all day.
I know
very
well.
And they literally do it all day.
They literally do it all day, and I literally, don't have much faith that it works. I think that search engine optimization specialists are, I'm not going to slander a whole profession here on our show. There are certain things you can do, but, I don't, as someone who lives and breathes in the blogging world, there's one form of search engine optimization that that works as far as I'm concerned, and that's getting out there and updating and participating in the conversation. And
right, and putting quality material out there, right?
Right, exactly.
Okay, so you have faith in the ranking. Let's say there's not a number associated with it, but you have faith that if someone does a search on a topic on which you've blogged or participated, you will show up about where you should on a Google search. You believe that, right? And more or less. But not so much with Avvo. And I think what that tells me is the Google search algorithm has earned your trust by being reliable, by being trustworthy. And I, from time to time, what I've written in response to certain posts, for example, is that Avvo will, have to live or die by the same fate, by the same standards. If the Avvo ranking turns out to be a horrible indication of an attorney's quality, they'll become a laughingstock.
This is Ernie. I have a question. Does anybody really? We understand that what Avvo is doing is novel. I think. We also understand, or at least it seems to me, not to be surprising that certain people are taken aback by the idea of quantifying in a numerical way their reputation when it has to do not with their reputation in some general way, but their reputation in their profession. That doesn't surprise me. But I wonder, and we seem not to have really focused on this, how confident do you, Mark, think that you can be about reducing somebody's professional reputation in the practice of law to a number? That's very different. That's a very different proposition than Google returning search results, because it doesn't quantify your ranking. Your site may have a page ranking, but that's not quantifying your professional reputation.
Yeah, but Ernie, yeah. We're used to the numerical ratings all over the place. Five-star restaurant, four-star restaurant, four stars in Amazon book reviews. It's interesting that Mark mentioned the travel thing, because now when I'm looking for a hotel, I look through all those ratings and I look at the numbers, and there's a service reputation there. I'm a little puzzled. There was some reaction to, Zagat's and Amazon when they were doing reviews at the beginning, but I'm not really sure we saw the immediate class action. And so I think that does open attorneys to the criticism that they're overly sensitive about this.
And just wrapping on that to answer you directly, Ernie, you got to come back to the consumer. And I think that, walking in the shoes of the consumer that is currently looking for a lawyer in the Yellow Pages based on whether it be the largest ad or the most colorful or what have you, consumers need guidance. And to give them guidance, you must give them systems that they understand. And from a very early age, and this goes to Dennis's point exactly, we're conditioned to understand numbers, et cetera. And we also have a mathematical model that generates fairly precise numbers. But what you have is, the question comes in, should this be 5 stars, which is really 5 increments? Should it be 10 increments? Should it be 100 increments, which is essentially what the Avvo rating is 100 increments. And there is no right answer. And in fact, we've, thought about many different ways that we might present this. But ultimately, we presented it in a way that we thought would be the easiest for consumers to understand. We provide the numerical rating, and then we also provide language that goes with the numerical rating that helps the consumer fairly quickly have some sense for, out of the information that we know, if they're looking at 2 profiles, now granted they could be looking at the exact same information or close to the exact same information in someone's profile on the web, and they say, geez, well, I just, I'm not a lawyer and I don't know any lawyers and I don't quite know how to distinguish between the two. We're offering up guidance that helps them distinguish, helps them compare. And again, and the thing to keep in mind, Ernie, is that in at least some comments that we receive, people say, this is, it almost makes it sound as though the Avvo rating can make or break someone's professional career. And while I'm flattered, that's shocking to me, because if you look at the Avvo 3-step guide, I back up. If you go to someone's overview page, you have the AVO rating, you have client ratings, and you have peer endorsements. And then you have all of this information that backs up the AVO rating that helps you look into where this rating's coming from. But then you also have the, if you go to our AVO three-step guide, step one says very clearly, AVO's a great place to start. But you should also consult friends and family and accountants and doctors and other trusted sources. You should consult the State Bar Association. There, you know, word of mouth, we will never replace word of mouth. But what we're trying to be is another tool. We're trying to be another resource. And the fact is, I mean, if consumers are still spending, I mean, if they're spending enough time to where lawyers are going to advertise at a rate of $1.3 billion a year in the Yellow Pages, then for me, you know, res ipsa loquitur, we need to bring more information and guidance to bear for the consumer. And I think if we do that, all boats will rise. And that's my opinion. But just, you know, if you look at the Ipsos number of 25 million Americans staying out of the legal marketplace due to intimidation and possibly mass confusion of what, you know, just I don't want to oversell that number because we don't know exactly why they're staying out, but for some reason they're staying out, and that there should be emblematic enough of the need for all of us, for all lawyers, to provide as much information and guidance as we can in an indexable, searchable, comparable way to give them a better place to start.
Well, and Mark, you're referring to what's been called for at least 10 years is the latent market for legal services, and it's been out there, and the people, Richard Susskind, Mark Lortzen, and Richard Granite, the people who've been involved in e-lawyering and what's going on in that space have always pointed to that. And I think there's a very real sense that there's something out there that you put your finger on, that in a lot of cases the competition for lawyers is not necessarily another lawyer, it's the people aren't going to do anything at all, or they're going to try to do something themselves, and then sometime later, a year or two, 5 years later, they're going to have to go to a lawyer and undo the mess that they made because they cannot figure out a way to enter into the legal services industry in a way that's you know, pleasant, friendly, you know, doesn't give them the bad experience that almost everybody that you talk to who has dealings with lawyers is more than happy to chew your ear off about. So I think you've tapped into something that's been out there. And then I also look at the audience that you're creating, because to me, AVO is kind of an interesting intellectual exercise to me because it's consumer-focused. I think there's a lot of, you know, I think it's really interesting where you're at there, but you know, what my rating is or isn't in that space really doesn't matter to me because that's not really what my market is at all. And so to go back to Denise's question, I really wouldn't put any effort into AVO as something that I wouldn't want to maintain my reputation or put effort into as compared to other things where my audience might be at. So the same way, if I write a book, I'm going to be interested in getting the reviews up on Amazon and some other places, but I'm not going to go after every single place there might be book reviews. I'm going to go after where my audience goes, and so I think that's another aspect of AVO, because it's a very interesting niche that it has, and I think it makes sense in the consumer space. Most right now, and that's where it's targeted.
Question for you, Mark, about going back to what you said a second ago about, I think you said 100 different components in the AVO rating. Can you expand on that a bit, what you meant by that?
I don't think I said anything about any number of components.
Oh, maybe I misunderstood you.
Did anybody else hear 100 different components?
I think you said increments.
Increments.
That you're saying as opposed to 5 or 10, that there's more like a...
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. What I was speaking to is any time that you build a rating system, Denise, the question is, should it be 5 stars, or is that too blunt of an instrument? Because that's only 5 increments. And the AVO rating, because it is 1 to 10, but it is also sliced into tenths, you are getting to a 100-point rating system.
I see what you're saying. Okay, so there's a broad spectrum that you can fall on there.
Yeah, and having, you know, I taught finance. After my time at Expedia, I was an adjunct professor of finance for Gonzaga University, which is also my alma mater. And academia also is going through this a bit as far as thinking, the grading systems, should it be on 100 points or should it be A, B, C or what have you? And, you know, ultimately all of these systems, you can argue that it should be 100 or it should be 5 or it should be binary or wherever you'd like to go with it. And they have pluses and minuses. I mean, they have positives and negatives. And what we're trying to do here is have a system that is easily processed by consumers so that, again, they're not spending a lot of time scratching their head trying to understand what this tool is trying to tell them. So it's trying to relate to consumers on a level that they understand.
Yeah, and Mark, to me, when you mentioned academia, this, to me, my first reaction was ratemyprofessors.com for lawyers, and that it had the same pluses and minuses. But that over time, what's happened with Rate My Professors has been that you've built this sort of warehouse of information and ratings that start to actually be valuable because you can see trends and patterns in it. You know, so the first year, you know, the information in there wasn't that great, and you probably got the people who either really loved a professor or really hated them. But over time, and I think this we may put a link in the show notes, but Jim Mall at the Mall Again blog pointed out recently that those Rate My Professor ratings were now starting to really reflect what he was seeing in the actual evaluations he gave in his class. And so that, you know, over time, these things, once you get to critical mass and, you know, that sort of thing, then they have a great value. The same way, you know, Amazon book reviews are valuable in their way, I think. But you still have to look at them critically, and they may be, just a starting point for what you're doing. But it's sort of, to me, that's the interesting parallel for me in the service ratings is the ratemyprofessors.com, where there has been a lot of uproar and a lot of concern about those, versus, to me, some of the other service things, restaurants, hotels, that sort of thing, where you haven't had that same level of uproar, but people have started to find them really useful. Because typically you can go look at a hotel and find 50 or 100 ratings and sift through it and actually get valuable information.
I agree entirely, Dennis. I mean, there's tremendous wisdom in the masses. And, you know, it is a mixture of, you talk about this, you know, Zagat's approach, the more editorial approach versus the client ratings are having, broad-based input. It's interesting. Again, there are pluses and minuses to both approaches, and that's why we brought both of those approaches to bear so that, over time, so that the consumer has early value, but over time, we will only continue to get better. There will be additional information sources we bring to bear as we build out the massive information that we have in the site. What will get very interesting is if you have 100 client reviews or 100 peer endorsements or what have you that all say, this is a great lawyer, and, the AVO rating has someone rated as a concern, or possibly they have them rated at an average or what have you. But, I mean, that's the beauty of it, is that you have these opinions that are coming together, and those opinions are all helping inform the consumer so that the consumer can say, you know what, I'm not sure I agree with the AVO rating here. And I think it was Mozzie who said, if that's the instant, if that is the case where we're totally out to lunch, which we're not, and I think that, again, if you start looking into these ratings and looking, we call it smoke testing, but spot checking them, the AVO rating system, it is a solid system that I'm very proud of. But in that instance, if we are having consumers consistently say, this rating is out to lunch, well then, we will fail, right? And that is where AVO should be judged, not in some class action lawsuit. We should be judged in the court of consumer opinion. And if consumers say, this makes no sense, this is not helpful to me, then it's time for AVO to pack up its bags. But I don't think that it's appropriate for us to pack up our bags just because a very small vocal minority of lawyers have decided to file the appropriate papers in the Western District of Washington.
Well, your motion to dismiss makes some great arguments about why the editorial component of the AVO rating is opinion and should be considered protected free speech under the First Amendment. So big pats on your on the back to your legal team there, who I noted have very high AVO ratings themselves. Your lead lawyer's a 10, your first lieutenant's a 9.7, and your third one, however, doesn't show up in the system. She doesn't exist.
Yes, she's a more junior associate. But keep in mind that we engaged all of these lawyers after the complaint.
No, so, obviously, yes.
There was a great article in the New York Times yesterday that was very supportive of AVO. I don't know how many of you saw it, but I was surprised that in the closing of the article he said it's suspect that Bruce Johnson, who is the lead attorney on our case, has a 10. And I was thinking, no, it's not. We hired him after the complaint was filed, and we were. I loved the idea that I was. I eat my own soup. I was hiring a lawyer that I saw that was rated superb by my own system.
Yes. Well, I do think they did an excellent job on the briefing, and it'll be interesting to watch that unfold. And I do think, you know, personally, the notion of preserving the ability to have rating and opinion sites in general is a strong public policy interest. So good luck.
Well, thank you very much. And I also want to thank you for giving me the time to chat on this show and from the input from the other guests. AVO is different. And we knew that when we launched AVO that it would take some time for us to get our message out and for everybody to get their arms around it. And we have many hills to climb in that regard, but just having an open and balanced forum like this to where we can talk about it in a very constructive way is impressive, and I want to thank you for that, Denise.
Oh, our pleasure. We really appreciate. I don't want to. It's sounding like we're wrapping up the show, and unless you guys don't have to run, we don't need to wrap up right now. But I
have to go work on my AVO writing.
But we do appreciate your taking the time. I know you're embroiled in a lot, running and managing your new company and fighting off this suit. So it's great that you could take the time to answer some questions here today.
Denise, I had a question for Mark.
Please.
If he would. To be honest, the class action suit was more of a surprise to me than where I expected that he would find the tough sledding, which I think is going to be on the ethics side from the bar regulators. And, I'm sort of outspoken on this, that when you have a system of regulation where people don't understand new technologies, I think, you know, there could be some difficulties here. And I'm curious whether Mark has run into any of those issues or any questions have come up on the ethics side at this point. And the areas would be where these are seen as endorsements of lawyers and whether lawyers have control of this, whether this is considered a form of advertising. And so I'm just curious whether Mark has run into any of that yet.
We have not. I mean, there are allegations in the complaint that AVO's somehow aiding and abetting in violations of the Washington attorney advertising rules. But here's the thing. I don't profess to be an expert in attorney advertising rules, but it's something that I think you're right, Dennis, that could potentially be an issue for us in the future. That being said, I don't think that AVO necessarily is something where a bar committee or bar regulators would say, this is against our rules. My sense is that they would say, wow, I'm not sure we've really seen this before. And, you know, for any bar regulator or any attorney that is out there, I as long, it just seems to me that the goal of all of the attorney advertising rules should be to get consumers the information that they need. And I could cite some of the same numbers and the same, all the numbers we've been talking about out of the Ipsos survey, and there are plenty of other numbers that come out of our research where you just, consumers have a difficult time navigating the legal industry. And the rules should be fashioned to help take away those pain points. And as long as bar regulators, I think, are working in that direction, yes, we may need to do some work as far as helping them understand how AVA works in their jurisdiction. But ultimately, I think we'll all end up at a good place because we're all marching towards the right goal.
No, I used to be an optimist like that, but I think generally, and especially in the last year or so, that the reaction has been if it's new, if it involves the internet or technology, the approach is that you can is to immediately be against it and not allow it. So that was when I saw what you were doing and saw how the different ways it could be misinterpreted. So you say, okay, somebody's gone from a 6 to a 10, is somebody going to say, oh, you can't do that, you need to go change it back to a 6? I mean, people just don't understand how the whole system works. And like I said, and there is a notion of endorsement that's floating around out there. And so I take your point of view on all of this, but I just am curious to see whether the next sort of negative response by lawyers will come in the ethical regulation side, as the next thing that you face.
I sure hope not. I think the best place for this, any judgment to be passed on this is in that court of consumer opinion. And, the bar associations, this is something Denise and I have actually chatted about in the past. And one thing that the bar associations are up against is it's not as though they're necessarily flush with cash. Denise told me, which I did not know, that the California bar almost went under. Is that right, Denise?
Well, they just ran out of money. So
okay, well,
the things
I
that
guess
you
used
can't
to go
be able,
under, but you can
right.
run out of money.
The things you used
still
to
have
be
all
able
the
to,
lawyers, that,
right? And the lawyers just wouldn't have some of their services or really any staff to call upon at the bar. It was sort of a dark and closed thing up there in San Francisco for a while. I think they're better
right.
now.
So, well, it's hard for the bars. And, also having worked for a government agency, it is no matter, when I was at the SEC, you had some incredibly bright attorneys and accountants and administrators, what have you, who wanted to be agents of change, but it was very hard for them because they did not necessarily have the resources. And I do think that that is an issue with a lot of the bars. They, they're not going to, Carolyn Elefant, she has blogged about this to a certain extent, is, the bars need to be more aggressive in putting up attorneys' websites, et cetera. And in something she's written or something she said, this partly is what opens the door for AVO to come in and provide this information. And I think that's true in part, but I think part of the problem is the bar associations, for them to engage in some sort of macro change like this, which is potentially controversial. It is hard for them both from a resources standpoint and from a political standpoint. And so you need independent agents like AVO to come in who are thinking about this in an entirely different way and potentially have the resources to do it, to come in and see if we can't, in this instance, get consumers the information and guidance they need so that they can have the help, so that they can have a better chance of choosing the right lawyer.
This is Ernie. I agree, and I think that there's something that that consumers don't see the Martindale-Hubbell as much, or they're not as aware of that. But the Martindale-Hubbell for lawyers has long been the reference tool, especially before there was the internet. I mean, that was really the way that when I was beginning my practice, I would find out what the lawyer on the other side was all about. And even though in some cases the information was minimal and perhaps the lawyer didn't have a rating because it took at least 5 years before you'd get one, you could at least figure out what law school they went to and so forth. But that function of Martindale has been replaced by websites. The rating function is still there, but the rating function is very minimal, and the biggest complaint I've always had with the rating function is that you pretty much, if you just hang in there, you'll eventually get an A or a B rating, and you kind of start out with a C, and nobody really gets rated as a poor lawyer, even though there are lawyers out there that other lawyers would agree are shady, unethical, cut corners, can't be trusted, do a crummy job. So the Martindale system doesn't even allow for that. And yet Martindale is a third party. It's not run by the Bar Association. So I think part of the reaction to your system is probably it's just so novel, and it's so it moves the rating game in the legal profession to a new location so quickly that a profession that is tradition bound and doesn't, you know, seem to embrace change rapidly feels threatened by that.
Right. And I think one of the components of the lawsuit or the driving forces behind the lawsuit is some of that fear and confusion and dread over losing control of that kind of information and enabling some third party to have such control over one's reputation. And then, you know, coupled with, you take that fear and you couple it with some of the more sort of comical results that were coming out of the site at the beginning that were written up and serving as sideshow, as you put it, Mark, where Supreme Court justices were rated lower than lots of other people. And so, you know, I think part of the lawsuit is questioning whether the rating could be misleading in that way. And one of the concerns people have is the ability for systems like this to be gamed. Could you talk for a bit about what measures you're taking to ensure that doesn't happen? And secondly, anything that you've seen in about the first month here that you've been live of efforts to game the rating system?
Sure. So again, with things always being evolving, you're right, we're taking on new information and learning new things. From the beginning, the question was whether you have the rating change immediately or whether you have it change monthly or annually or what have you. And one thing that we chose to do was allow somebody to input things and actually see that their rating was going up. And however, one concern that we had was, okay, or at least it was raised by someone on the team, was saying, you know, what if lawyers come in and just start uploading stuff and that's not what we're asking for? I mean, we very clearly are asking for industry recognition, not what has become the stereotypical softball award, which is called out in the complaint. And so what we do is we have a data team that is two lawyers and actually one non-lawyer who is one of our program managers, and I even get involved in it at times. It's the beauty of a startup. But every piece of information that comes into our site is reviewed by a human to the extent that it is flagged as unknown. So if some sort of award comes in, for example, and we've already seen that before, then the computer just immediately says, okay, this is that award, and assesses the and attributes the correct number of points consistent with our system. However, if it doesn't recognize it, it goes to unknown, and then a human looks at it, the human says, okay, yes, the fourth grade spelling bee, the softball award, that is not industry recognition. And that's the system that we built in to combat that. However, what I told the team here pre-launch is that you're dealing with attorneys. And attorneys are, you know, a respectful, you know, law-abiding bunch. And I don't expect much gaming. And in all sincerity, I did not expect much gaming. And you know, to this date, you know, I think that the overwhelming majority of lawyers are simply just providing that industry recognition information, realizing that it's legally related, and putting it in. And I shouldn't say I think. I mean, we're seeing this come in, and we're talking about a very small few who I think are AVO detractors. And we talk about this. We've all talked about this fear factor. They have some fear of AVO, and so they're trying to tear us down. And so in an attempt, what they'll do is they'll put false stuff in there and say, ha, 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 look at Avvo, look what I put in there, and it put my rating up. Well, it is short-lived because the human element will come in and look at it and make sure that everything is copacetic. But, you know, I guess it's something that surprised me. You know, I knew that we would have some detractors. I didn't realize that they would put these things in and then put it out on blogs and try to discredit it with discredit us with it.
And but, how long have you been working on the web?
Well, we're coming up on a month.
No, I mean you personally. And, I mean, this sort of thing happens all the time.
Well, it does to a certain extent. I mean, now, if you want to go back to talk about the client ratings, you know, we review all client ratings before we put them up, et cetera. But, Denise, maybe I was giving this, overall, I believe that my feeling about how lawyers interact with their reputation and professional services, it stands. But you're right, there is a small number of people that come in and are trying to mess with the site, I'll call it. And yeah, I didn't expect to see that really coming from lawyers because I have a tremendous amount of respect for the profession. And I'm married to a lawyer and I have in-laws who are lawyers like crazy. My mother went to law school. She was a clerk for the Montana Supreme Court. My uncle's a judge. I mean, I know the legal profession very well, and I love the legal profession. And I guess I'm surprised, and without going on and on about this, that some people would try to, so that lawyers would try to do this as opposed to, just having some sort of web hacker come in
mustaches
on everybody's pictures.
What if it's not a lawyer? Is it possible for someone to come along and claim an unclaimed Avvo page by masquerading?
It's hard for them to do. I mean, you can never say never on the web. And Denise, you know that as much as anybody. To the extent that somebody was able to breach the security that we have, I suppose that could happen. But, and that was one of the reasons that we built in credit cards, is with attorneys being as security conscious as they are and doing research with attorneys. And, one thing we definitely heard was people saying, well, could somebody come in and claim my profile? I wouldn't like that. And so one of the reasons that we put the credit card in, I thought that we would be hailed by lawyers who would say, this is fantastic that, you're thinking about our security. But again, I do think,
we should step back for a second and let listeners who haven't been on the site or tried to claim a page know that one of the things that Avvo was doing initially, and I think you've stopped this, right, to require someone to put in a credit card number just to verify their identity when they attempt to claim a page. You're still doing that?
We have credit card verification in an attempt to prevent people from, again, coming in and wreaking any sort of havoc on the site and claiming multiple profiles and stuffing them full of stuff that shouldn't be there. We still have that. And it's funny, I get a lot of differing feedback on all the elements on the site. But that is an area where some people say you must have this and other people say you don't need to have this. And in the complaint, they hammer on this quite hard as saying that this is something that this is, when they're painting, the complaint paints the entire site as somehow corrupt. And this would be just another element of that in saying that, asking lawyers to do this is nefarious and underhanded or what have you. It's all quite shocking to me. But
well, just to throw one other adjective into the mix, I bumped into an in-house lawyer at a large e-commerce company in your town, who shall remain nameless, we were talking about Avvo and the credit card thing, and she said, God knows why they want to collect credit card information. That you have incumbent on you, when you are collecting that kind of data to protect it, and the obligations that go along with that are fairly substantial.
Well, we don't store it, and that helps. But I'll just staying on this for a second. Here's the change that we're going through. we, from the public records, from the bar data for a lot of attorneys, we have an email for them in a lot of instances. And so we're testing this right now. And what we'll do is if you come to us, we will say, okay, we have this email for you. Can we send you an email at this address? And if they say yes, we send an email, and then there are instructions how to claim the profile, and we'll do that without a credit card. That's probably what you were thinking of initially, Denise, how we're changing this. But if we don't have an email address, we'll still need to get that credit card because, again, we're just trying to protect the sanctity. That profile belongs to somebody, and it would be unfortunate if some sort of web bot or what have you got in there and used it to start spamming people or what have you.
So let me make sure I understand. The email address that you can use for verification purposes has to match the one that's on record with the state bar?
Exactly.
Okay, well, that brings up one other issue I wanted to ask about, that so much of your rating is derived from, or your initial take on a lawyer anyway, is derived from what you're pulling from state bar records.
Okay, and then Denise, I have to do this. I actually have another interview waiting at 12.
Okay, great.
So let me finish with this question, and then I hate to do this, but our PR person standing at my door saying... you need to pay attention.
Thank you so much for being with us. And yes, please just let me know how often you are updating that state bar information that you're pulling from the state bar sites. Because it's, at least from what I could tell as to my own data on your site, it's at least 6 months out of date.
Right. One of some of the earlier states that we pulled, California being one of them, we're in the process of updating right now. But what we're up against in that instance, and we talked about the state bar associations and what resources that they have, we're somewhat reliant upon the bars. And, I mean, we would love to update it on a daily basis. Although considering the volume of data that we're updating, we would need a massive warehouse of computers to get it done on a daily basis. But I'd love to be there one day. We are updating it as quickly as we can. But some bars say to us, you know, even with them running the reports, getting it to us can be a slower process.
Okay, Mark, we're going to let you go, and I think we'll just wrap up the show with you off the line. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Yes, it was a pleasure, and I reiterate all my points before, and it's been the nicest hour and a half I've spent on the radio or on a podcast in a while, so thank you so much.
Great, wonderful to have you.
Take care, everybody.
All right, so we're here still with Dennis and Ernie and Mozzie. Guys, do you have any final wrap-up thoughts about this site and what it's doing and its larger implications for the web ecosystem? How about you, Ernie?
I think it's a good first step. You know, I think it's great that somebody is trying to tackle the problem. I think it's a really thorny problem, and I'm not surprised that there's a lot of controversy about it because, as I said earlier, I mean, the legal profession, as we all know, is a very conservative profession, or has been. And when it encounters something novel like this that's just really jumps to a completely new place, invariably there are going to be pockets of resistance and questioning. And I think that, you know, trying to create a numerical system is even more of a thorny problem. But, you know, if restaurants get rated that way and that helps people and people feel satisfied with that, and consumers are allowed to have input, and over time, Mark and his colleagues make adjustments, then I think, you know, either this product will succeed or something else like it will come into place, and it'll happen. I mean, I see this kind of thing as inevitable, you know, whether it's this one or something else. I just see it as inevitable just by the nature of social networks and the demand for that kind of information.
How about you, Mozzie?
I really wanted to go after Dennis.
Oh, you want to go after Dennis?
I want to go after Dennis.
Dennis, are you ready and able to?
You want to criticize me, or you want to go second?
I just believe in the old adage that age goes before beauty. So,
the thing is, as I mentioned, this notion of the latent market for legal services, that notion has been around for a while, and I think you can go back, you know, a good number of years, and I would guess you know, Denise and Ernie, in our between lawyers conversations, this is probably an idea that we batted around, you know, at different times. And it all comes down to timing, critical mass, and execution. And is the time right for this? I don't know. Is this the vehicle? I don't know. I'm sort of this, you know, the school let a thousand flowers bloom, and we'll see what happens. So I think it's an interesting approach. I think that they got some tough sledding on the ethical side, I believe, in this current environment. And maybe that's a good thing, and it will start to rip the regulation out of the state bar's hands and maybe into something federal or that will allow us to use the Internet in the same way that other people use. So this is interesting. I'm less interested in the numerical rating than I am in the sort of collected responses that they get. Because I think if you're a consumer, as people said, it's really, really difficult to tell whether to judge whether legal services are good or bad or indifferent, you know, especially in something like estate planning, where you don't really know until you die whether the work was done was good. So,
and at that point, you're not in any position to rate it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's really tough at that point as a service. You know, how do you gauge that? But if you're a consumer, you are concerned about things like, are my phone calls answered? Are people friendly? Are they responsive? Does the work get done? Do I feel like I get fair value for my money? And to the extent that that starts to come into the ratings, then that becomes really significant, especially in the consumer areas, bankruptcy, family law, those sorts of things. And that's where it really becomes interesting. Like I said, I'm less interested in numerical ratings. You know, I think some of this stuff is a red herring that Supreme Court judges have lower ratings than other people. Well, look, the Supreme Court judges aren't handling your cases, so they should have a zero as far as I'm concerned in terms of this rating system. So it's out there. It's an interesting experiment, I would say. As Ernie says, it's an interesting first step. And I think that Mark's explanations and his conversation today were, I think, really added to the discussion.
Well, Mozzie, I loved your point earlier about, you know, the fact that this is just going to have to be out there in the marketplace and let people gauge whether it's offering them trustworthy or valuable information or not. You know, what's your initial take on how good a job they're doing?
Well, I tell you what, first of all, let me say that I agree with, and then to my own surprise, I agree with large parts of what I heard from Ernie and what I heard from Dennis. I don't know about their background. I can tell you that back, I don't know, 7-8 years ago, I did run a website that was exclusively for lawyers, and it actually used a lot of features that are much more readily available now. And my point is, having been there, I know for a fact that there are all kinds of ironies, quite apart from everything that both these gentlemen said, which are, like I say, all for the most part true, but there are all kinds of ironies, unexpected things. So if you were to ask me what I think about the job that Avvo's doing, the platform is stable. It's easy to use. I mean, it was easy for me to use. I presume it would be easy for a prospective client to check me out. So in that respect, it looks like a pretty useful tool. On the other hand, I didn't get a chance to say this while Mark Britton was on the line, but I'm in one of the test markets. I'm still waiting for someone to call me up and say, I saw you on Avvo. Hasn't happened yet. You know, it doesn't do you much good to build a Titanic but not have any passengers. So I think it's a good structure, but if people don't use it for whatever reason, and it might be a reason that none of us can envision, no matter how hard we tried, if people don't use it, or if not enough people use it, then unfortunately the experiment will fail. I mean, after all, business is the harshest judge of all. Which is why sometimes, you know, again, in the case of this class action, for instance, that's just a classic. I look at it and I'm thinking, who are you protecting exactly? I mean, are you trying to be sort of everyone's protective uncle? You're going to put your arm around the collective and say, don't worry, I'll protect you from these bad, bad people at Avvo. How about this? If people don't like what they see, they'll go elsewhere. So I think the mere existence of Avvo is better for us all. Let's say it fails. Of course, that would mean somebody, you know, poured $14 million down the drain. But, you know, whatever. Someone else will come up, hopefully in its wake. As I told Carolyn Elephant in one of my comments to a blog post of hers, come on, people, Thompson, LexisNexis, Reed Elsevier, where have you guys been? You think Avo's new and dangerous? You guys have had the market absolutely all to yourselves from time immemorial. You could have shaped this market. You could have owned this market just like you do so many others. They chose not to. I'm glad Avo's there, aren't you?
Yeah, on balance, I think I am. I think it's a really interesting experiment. I think, you know, Mark's got his head on straight and good goals for the site, and I think they are listening to what people are saying. I think it speaks volumes that he came here and chatted with us so frankly and so long today. And, you know, I wish them well, and I hope that, you know, they manage to shake out the kinks and the bugs and provide something that's useful to everyone concerned.
Hey, Denise, can I just add just one thing? Is that with all the focus on Avo, it is worth pointing out that there are some really interesting tools out there that in other sectors other than the consumer area that are really interesting that I think can really help people select lawyers. And you know, Mazi mentioned Thompson as one, but I've seen some things from Thompson that I think are really cool. And if you're for businesses who are evaluating and selecting lawyers, so it's worth mentioning that Avo isn't the only game in town, in the same way that Martindale isn't the only game in town. But it's, I think, where Avo is really attractive is in the consumer space. But it's worth checking out some of the other tools that are out there in the other spaces where people are trying to select lawyers.
Yeah, I guess that's a problem too, is that other tools might exist to do this, but it's not only difficult to get the information that you want to get ultimately about the legal profession or a particular lawyer, it's difficult to get information about the tools that might be available, you know, if you are a consumer. So,
right. And as you said earlier, Denise, the fact is that if, you know, nothing compares to, you know, managing your reputation on all this stuff better than a great website or blog where you actually take control of what people see about you. And you know, these tools are basically screening tools, and then you want people to come to your blog or website, and that's where they're going to get the information to make a good decision.
Yeah, I guess that's why I continue to pay attention to and be intrigued by the whole vendor relationship management discussion that Doc Searles is leading in connection now with his fellowship at Berkman at Harvard. And, you know, with the notion that you as the user, as the individual, you know, have a whole bunch of information about yourself and should be able to have some say over how it goes out into the world and you know, who's using it and in what way, and that folks should have to, you should be the central repository of that, simply because to have it, you know, flourishing in a million different locations both can be harmful to you as an individual and impossible for you to manage.
So you're talking about karma?
No, I'm serious.
What you're talking about, what you're saying is in our everyday lives, we're going to touch somebody. And if you can imagine that every time you interceded in a matter or helped somebody or harmed somebody, you left sort of a visible trail, it's the combination of all those visible trails that represent your reputation. You can never, how are you going to make yourself the sole repository of your reputation? Your reputation is the sum total of everything you do and say.
Oh, absolutely. Reputation and identity are two different things, right? I mean, your identity, and maybe reputation is a component of your identity, but reputation, I think, is a collaborative effort that, as you say, is made up of everything that you do and then the trail that it leaves behind you, right? Everything that folks think about you and say about you and do in response to what you do. So,
that's
a much more slippery thing to have any sort of control over or ownership of.
Yeah, I was going to say, when Denise is talking about VRM, the vendor relationship management, what really becomes interesting, and this is several years down the line, I think, is that I like to use the example with doctors. My wife is a nurse, and she knows all these nurses, and she's been a nurse forever. And so when I need a doctor, I say, here are the things that I like to have in a doctor, you know, certain set of things. And then by talking with their friends, are able to point me in the direction of a doctor that's really well suited for me. And so I like all the doctors that I use. And but you're saying, can we kind of put that out there in a sort of easily managed package so that we can go out there and say, hey, I'm looking for a lawyer. I want them to return calls. I want them to be reasonably knowledgeable. I want to have them a certain rating. I want to have this. And then, boom, that list gets returned to me. That's sort of the holy grail of all this stuff. You know, whether it's lawyers, whether it's books we want to read, whether it's, something to help me not spend the countless hours I've spent trying to find the perfect iPod speakers. You know, what are you saying? Can I do something where I just put my wants out there to the world, and then the world kind of reacts to that and serves up the people who meet my needs? And that's maybe at least a generation, maybe two generations away. But I think that Doc Searles is on to something with that idea.
Yeah, and I just wonder whether the whole notion of you know, trying to build data without people's participation offends that notion. And, you know, at least Avvo does let people come in and claim their identities on the site and manipulate them, or maybe that's the wrong word, enhance them, as Mozzie did.
Yeah, I was going to say, to me it comes down to critical mass. I mean, those things, there is a point where it's like tumbleweeds blowing through the side. It's just not useful to you. And other points where it does take on that critical mass, and you know, we can point to Flickr or you can point to some other things and say, hey, at a certain point, this just became really valuable. We kind of stepped over the line where it became truly valuable. And I just don't know whether Avvo can reach that point.
Let me just say very quickly this. I think that was Dennis speaking. I'm not sure.
Yes.
Okay. I totally agree. I mean, obviously, I think we can all agree with that evaluation. There is a tipping point. Yes, that's a very hackneyed term. Everybody uses it. But it's a tipping point. There's a line that you cross. You know what, though? Somebody already did that evaluation. They may be completely wrong. But somebody did that evaluation, and they answered yes to the tune of $14 million. I hate to keep coming back to this, but having been in that space, I've talked to venture capitalists. I've tried to convince venture capitalists. You'll get more feeling out of Mount Rushmore than a panel of venture capitalists. These are people who, in order to move them to that extent, you know, your idea has got to be dynamite. Don't you think? Or am I just using kind of reverse causation?
I think maybe a little bit. I think I've seen a whole share of things get funded that.
But in this space,
shouldn't.
Have you ever seen anything funded like this in this space?
In the legal vertical? Well, no, I don't think that you see a whole lot of innovation here. So, you know.
I think the thing is that it's sort of like one of two things, really, and it's hard to know which it is. That one, you're right, that the money wouldn't be there unless the idea was great. On the other hand, unless we're at the tail end of what's going to be a little, you know, bubble bursting, then it's just, you know, another bad VC investment. So, and who knows? Like I said, the timing on all this, at some point the timing is going to be right and the execution is going to be right on one of these things, and it could very well be this one.
Well, speaking of great ideas, Dennis, nice segue for me there. Thank you. We do have a new sponsor for the show, and that's Audible.com. And if you go to audible.com/twit, we do have a recommendation that I'd love to give folks. And if you guys had the chance, I did send around an email before the show. If anybody had a book on Audible they wanted to plug, now would be the time. But I found something. It's not actually a book, but we've had a pretty academic discussion here today. And this is something that goes right along with that. It is the Library of Congress series on the digital future, a collection of, let's see, how many lectures? 8 lectures by some real luminaries in the internet and technology arena, including David Weinberger and Brewster Kahle and a whole bunch of other really wonderful folks. And it would otherwise be $14.95 on Audible. But if you go to that link, audible.com/twit, and sign up for their no strings trial, you can get it for free. So I hope folks will check that out. Anybody else have a recommendation they want to toss out there?
You know, I didn't check the Audible side, but the book I'm recommending to people is John Robb's new book, Brave New War, which is just and especially if you follow up in some of the things in his bibliography of other suggested readings, that's just a paradigm-shifting read on what's going on in the world today.
Cool. I'll check that out. I haven't seen that one yet. Well, guys, thanks so much for taking the time to sit here and chat today. Dennis, why don't you tell folks where they can find you online?
Well, the easiest way is www.denniskennedy.com, and my blog and my website is there, and you find me in various publications and podcasts and all around. And I'm always happy for people to get in touch with me.
Great. And Mozzie, thanks so much for joining us today. It was great to have you on the show.
I really appreciate you having me on, Denise, and I'm confident that after today I'll never speak with you again. However, before I go...
Don't know, not at all. I mean, unless you are feeling like you never want to speak to me again.
No. Before I go, though, people can find out more about some of these legal technology topics that I've written on at dcbalpm.wordpress.com.
And why don't you explain what the DCBALPM stands for?
Yes, I've long been with the DuPage County Bar Association here in beautiful DuPage County, Illinois, just outside of Chicago. And I started blogging most heavily in connection with the Bankruptcy Committee. Hence, you can find my first real blog at dcbabk.wordpress. And more recently with the Law Practice Management Committee, where I've been chair for, I guess it's going to be my third year, at dcbalpm.wordpress.com. Or you can just Google Mozzie Hedayat, because there probably aren't too many other people with that name, and a lot of my stuff will come up that way.
Great. Thank you so much. And Ernie, always a pleasure to have you back on the show.
Same here. I enjoyed it as always. And my parting book recommendation is a book called Eat, Pray, Love.
Eat, Pray, Love?
Yeah, it's about a woman's spiritual adventure after having undergone a divorce and difficult romantic breakup following her divorce. And she goes to Italy, where she eats with gusto, and then to India, where she learns to pray and find spirituality. And then she winds up in Bali, Indonesia, where she is seeking balance, but ultimately finds the love that had eluded her. It's a very funny, charming story.
Oh, good. I'm going to have
to. And it's on audible.com. I checked.
Wonderful. All right. And we can find you at ErnieTheAttorney.net, correct?
Yep.
All right, guys. Take care and be careful out there.
Can I say one last thing? I don't want this necessarily to be on the podcast, but I just want to say the three of you are among the very early legal bloggers that I read. It is seriously a big honor to be on the same show with you guys. I really enjoyed this. Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity.
Oh, well, of course we're going to leave that on the podcast. How would I ever edit that out?
Well, I mean, anyway. Well, then I just embarrassed myself.
No, it's great being with you. Yeah, I mean, you have a lot of great insights and experience in this area, so it was a pleasure being on the call with you.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. We've been exchanging emails for a very long time, and I'm glad to have finally gotten to meet you, Mozzie. Dennis and Ernie and I go way back, but it's great to know you a little better, too.
Yeah, you guys have been really patient. Appreciate that.
Our pleasure. All right, folks, that's it for This Week in Law. We'll see you next time.